ahead, man. We're live.
Hey, how's it going? So this is a very important topic because this can happen to anyone in the world. If we're not careful, we realize, oh, shoot, there's people who have authority over our lives who can write down on a piece of paper some scribbles and all of a sudden change or alter our reality. It's insane what we see across the world. You may be living in America and be like, well, it's not happening here, but we have to learn from people, our fellow men across the world, perhaps. Vinny, you're from, what is it, New Zealand or Australia? You have a powerful story to share, one that happened not so long ago, but it affected you, and it also made you excommunicate from your partners. You were dragged out of the streets. You were protesting. You were peaceful. You're a funny guy. You seem harmless. So what went on in your story, man? I want you to share with the audience why I say what I just said. Why is there tyranny happening that people are unaware of, and how could it happen to them?
Well, the world is not all sunshine and rainbows and sugar-coated cupcakes, unfortunately. Sometimes reality is not what you would prefer. Now, the reality is that in the 20th century, the leading cause of unnatural death in mankind's history is called democide. That's when you get exterminated by your democratically elected leaders. And tyranny doesn't just suddenly come out and say, I'm a tyrant, I want to enslave you, and anybody who doesn't want to be a willing slave, I'm going to crush and destroy and kill. They don't come out and say that. What they come out and say is, we want to keep you safe. We want you to be kind. We want you to take no risks. We want to take care of you. So that way, the part of your brain that goes, something's going on here, it is quite capable of being programmed to behave in the opposite way of which it should. How you should react is to use the one forgotten word, no. But how you do react is you go, okay, all right, just keep me safe. And that's what they want. So when New Zealand was going in through lockdowns, we had, I think, 30 minutes notice that a lockdown was coming. Lockdown's coming tonight at 11:59 a.m. I was like, what? All of a sudden. Now, we knew that it was coming anyway. And the reason why we knew is because there's all sorts of leaks that happen from teachers, nurses, and factory staff, and supermarket staff, who are all being told around about the same period of time that they need to stock up for something very, very soon. Now, how would they know that unless these lockdowns were planned? So on August 18th, 2021, Jacinda Ardern, a Freemason scholarship recipient, former employee of Tony Blair, who was mentored by current UN employee Helen Clark and former UN employee David Shearer, decided to lock the country down because allegedly there was a single case of the Delta variant, and lock it down in level 4. That means pretty much nobody can go anywhere unless you're essential services. Every business had to shut down, food and so on and so forth you couldn't get. And this causes untold suffering to the population. If you are, for example, a 14-year-old girl in the Hokianga near where Billy lives, that lockdown was so traumatic for you that you hung yourself on the day that we were protesting the lockdowns. Okay? It literally kills people just like that, because the thought of having to endure another lockdown at that point was too much for many people to take, and they're not around anymore. And that is why we went and protested outside Television New Zealand Central Studios in the centre of Auckland City, the largest city in New Zealand, because we knew that we were going to get arrested for doing it. And we knew that when people saw us get arrested for peacefully protesting, they would have that part of their brain reactivate that says, something's going on here. No. And interestingly enough, a significant portion of the current alternative media in New Zealand at that time did not exist. They did not exist at that time. And at the time that myself and Billy TK were arrested and banned from the internet, this is a period of about 6 weeks that we were unable to access the internet. In the 21st century, in the middle of lockdown, with no internet and no mobile-capable device.
For speaking your mind?
No, for peacefully gathering in the broad daylight and talking about how we are opposed to the lockdown measures, that we believe...
Using your own conscience.
...that they were ineffective. And it was a sacrifice play. Now, I may have my misgivings about perhaps how I did it or how I acted and things of that nature, but I think we were just going on instinct. My instinct told me that there's an old saying, how do you expose a fascist? By making them act like it. And we were held for 28 hours in solitary confinement. And that was very traumatic. I think I had like 7 panic attacks in the cells and a panic attack in the paddy wagon because I'm claustrophobic, you see, and I'm also tyrannophobic. So I basically have a great fear of being enslaved. And when you're locked away in a back of a paddy wagon and you're 6'6", that's quite difficult for me to deal with. And so the significant trauma that I suffered just in the case of the arrest was compounded by the fact that they were saying we could go to prison for up to 6 months. Mm. Now, on top of that, at the time, a constable, Derek Chung, came in while we were severely traumatized and in solitary confinement without a lawyer and demanded that we give him our phone passwords. Billy didn't have a phone password. And I didn't give mine because I didn't have a lawyer present and they wouldn't get me one at the time. They wouldn't even give me a pencil and paper to write anything down. And so when I did finally get my hands on a lawyer that night, the huge weight of this came down on me when I found out that I'd also been charged for breaching the Search and Surveillance Act and could face up to 3 months in prison for not giving my cell phone password. The police kept my cell phone for 9 months. They had to send it all the way down to the capital in Wellington to have the best, the smartest, the most highly paid, and the most capably trained police that they could to try and crack that phone. It's an iPhone. They're very, very hard to crack. And I looked at the... usage data, because I have a usage data tracker on my phone, because I don't like using my phone very much. And it turned out that they did manage to crack it. It took them 8.5 months to crack that phone using the best people they had. The password was 123456. And so when we were going through this process, there's a protracted court process. So to get those bail conditions removed involved going to the district court 4 times and the high court once. This cost us about $22,000 just to be able to make a phone call or just to be able to do internet banking. This was the brutal regime that we were under. And while we were under that, an entire alternative truth media just suddenly popped up out of nowhere. People like Chantal Baker and Counterspin and Liz Gunn and a number of other people who've made significant headway in the alternative media in New Zealand since then, which was both a delight and a shock to me because I'd been doing this for 15 years. And I came out after 6 weeks and these people already had a bigger following than I did. And they didn't exist before that 6 weeks. You see?
Did they mention your situation at all? Or
no, largely no. I believe Counterspin Media did mention it, and they were there. on the day, but they didn't come to speak or do anything. They were just there to document it. And in fact, their video footage from that day was used by the police as evidence in the trial. And that was the first time I'd even seen that footage because of the difficulty in trying to get anything. And you told me that there were lots of articles internationally. I had no idea that there was anything out there.
Yeah, that's how I found out. I found, like, the day that happened, I actually, like, people were actually messaging me because I was doing a live stream. I was like, wait, what? Really? Vinny Eastwood? What happened? I'm like, this guy, you know, again, like I said, you're playful, you're funny. Like, I would know you wouldn't do anything harmful. You know, you've had a radio show, you have a reputation, and you just want people to think for themselves and use their own conscience. That's all. But here you have some order followers who you can see this on camera and video footage. They're pulling you out of the crowd. They're basically inciting violence, these police members. And you can call them a gang if you want. I would. And they're basically inciting violence, pulling you out of this crowd. Everybody in the crowd is like, what are you doing? Why are you taking Vinny? You can see the footage yourself. And it's like, you know, why would they do this? It's insane.
Well, when you are part of a cult, anybody who isn't part of the cult is the enemy. Okay, and if you're part of the cult, you really believe that. Okay, as far as they were concerned, they had a job to do. What that means is they're getting money to put food on their table. Now, if they get to continue putting food on their table, but the country ostensibly loses the right to protest in the process, then that's a sacrifice they're more than willing to make. Your freedom for my family. Okay, this means that they don't actually have a working conscience, all right?
And the opposite to that is what you did, where you were brave and you stood up for your conscience, something that they weren't willing to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's something I would admire, you know?
I engaged in it in a very cynical manner, though. It was simply just the fact that you bait them. You put out an easily targeted piece of meat that looks incredibly vulnerable, so that if anybody comes out and is stupid enough to come and attack them in this way or to be brutal towards them, makes them look very, very bad indeed, makes them reveal their true character. And unfortunately, the true character of New Zealand, the government, the police, and in large part the general public, they are vicious, mind-controlled, lazy, apathetic, cowardly, ignorant people. That's basically the best I can and most concisely I can describe it as. These people are invoking their own doom via their treatment of people like myself and Billy TK. And I was making a video because since that, because I've been in this for longer than anybody else has, I can say that definitively. I've been making truth content in New Zealand for up to 5 times longer than anybody in the current New Zealand truth movement. Okay, 15 years I've been doing this. A lot of these people have only been around maybe a year, maybe 2, 3, 4 tops. They don't know what I have done. They haven't seen the hundreds and thousands of interviews that I have conducted with activists around New Zealand across the political spectrum with hundreds of different subjects and issues. They don't have the overview. I do. And this makes it very, very difficult for me to speak to them or give them any kind of advice because they don't know who they're talking to. They don't, because they weren't there paying attention for the past decade. Suddenly, when lockdowns happen, they think that there's something wrong. Something was wrong long before that. These lockdowns didn't appear out of nowhere. I remember in 2008 we were covering the swine flu, and all of these measures that we're seeing today were tested and tried during that period in 2008 to try and get the public to accept them. And then every single year, some new exotic-sounding virus would come out. The monkey virus, the fish virus, the camel virus, the ape virus, whatever name that they want to put on it, just to keep people off the back foot. Now, this is because of how scams work. If you have a scam and it's pretty effective, like selling snake oil or some kind of false flag terrorism, for example, you know that that methodology works and it convinces people to abandon their reason and make you the winner in any of those scenarios. However, if you do it all the time in the exact same way with the exact same label on it, people immediately will begin to figure out that something is up. So what you do is you take that scam underground, you don't use it for a little while, and then you bring it back and give it a different name. And by the time anybody's figured out that it could potentially be the same scam rearing its ugly head again, it goes underground again, people lose interest, they forget about it, and then you can use it the next year. Okay? But it takes a decade of paying attention for those kind of truth bombs to drop on your cerebellum. Okay? And most people have, I believe, currently the statistics of this, approximately a 5 to 6 second attention span. So the possibility, the mere possibility, that people will even have any knowledge of what is going on right here, right now, is significantly low unless they've been listening to shows like mine for a long, long time. This is the situation that we're dealing with here in New Zealand. We have a corrupt judiciary. This judge looked at my baby boy, I think he was like 3 months old at the time, and acknowledged him and acknowledged that my partner Rebecca was there. And then he sentenced me to 4 months in prison. And Billy's got five kids, I think, there as well, and sentenced him to 5 months prison. And this is after two-ish years of delays and expenses. And Billy has told me that he's paid already, I think, $50,000 to $70,000.
Now, why?
On his legal fees.
Why are you guys going to prison for that?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Because that's the law. Under the COVID-19 Health Response Act, which was passed at 4 o'clock in the morning when almost nobody was there without opposition, it gave the police and judiciary untold powers, and things like, for example, organizing a gathering, they can give you a $1,000 to $4,000 fine. And attending a gathering, on the other hand, can give you up to 6 months in prison or a $4,000 fine. So we were facing a judge, the same judge that gave us our draconian bail conditions, the worst bail conditions. I've been interviewing activists for a long time, and I've never heard of bail conditions this severe, ever. It was hugely unprecedented at the time, and still is, because nobody, including other activists who've been arrested since then, including for internet violations and things like that, have been given restrictions like that. Okay, and I believe this was to make sure that we couldn't capitalize on the notoriety of our arrest. Okay, so after you've been arrested, you could potentially be interviewed by people every single day. I mean, look at what happened to Posey Parker and the trans activists and things of that nature that happened here in New Zealand, breaking through, busting heads, pouring tomato juice on Posey's head, you know, that kind of thing. She was being interviewed day after day, all day long, by people all around the world because of that, and so could myself and Billy have been, but we weren't, because we couldn't, because it was illegal. Just like we couldn't go to the Wellington protests in order to help out down there, because we were number one and number two in the truth movement at the time we were arrested, and so everybody else got to go down there, and we saw the result. No planning. No significant advice from people like Constable Buck Rains was taken into account, that these people are pigs and they're going to destroy you. You need to have tactics. You need to have defences put up and things of that nature. Very serious advice from very qualified people being given to them on how to defend their freedom, and they ignored them. You know what the plan was for all the Wellington protesters in order to hold back a whole bunch of police with EMF weapons, sound weapons, pepper spray, and body armor, and helmets, and shields? Their plan was to link arms and chant the words peace and love over and over again. Apparently that was going to beat them back. All right. And this sort of ignorance of what we're actually dealing with here is the real problem. People don't realize that Billy and I proved that day that you don't have any rights in New Zealand anymore. Maybe you did once, but not anymore you don't. If they can arrest you for peacefully protesting on the side of the street, ban you from speaking out after the fact or getting any help, and then send you to prison for it, you don't live in a free country anymore, far from it. And everybody who went down to Wellington for this mandate protest didn't get the memo. We'd already proven they weren't going to come and talk to you. They weren't going to help you. They weren't going to listen to you. They were just going to brutally put you down, just like they did us. We were the test case, and nobody listened because we weren't able to speak. This country is locked down tight, tighter than a snare drum. And the methodology by which you would resist such a system would frequently go through back through the system itself. If you've got a problem with the police, go to the Independent Police Conduct Authority that's staffed 100% by police. If you've got a problem with banking, go to the ombudsman who's appointed by the banks. If you have a problem with corruption, go to Transparency International, whose members are the most corrupt plutocrats in the country. You see, they've locked every conceivable way of resisting tyranny out. Now, at the moment, we're doing the last test. Like, we know for a fact that you can't protest because you don't have any right to protest anymore, that you can't speak because if you speak, you get censored. And we know for a fact that if you go to the district courts, at least you're going to get very brutalized like we were. All right. I'm told that the verdict and the sentence that was passed upon myself and Billy sent the entire legal fraternity in New Zealand into a state of shock, I'm told. They could not believe that such a heavy-handed sentence was put down. Why do you think we did what we did in broad daylight so that we would definitely get arrested? It's to show you.
Yeah, it definitely showed me. I was like, what in the world? You know, and I just want to say, Vinny, what you did is remarkable because the abolitionists, and if you look at the history of nonviolent protest, and they work better than any other form of protest, so you're right on that point, the abolitionists were willing to go to jail for their beliefs too. I mean, they set up their own towns. I'm talking about here in America, for those in New Zealand who don't know, they set up their own towns because the slaves were not being freed and they had nowhere to go, so they're like, hey, okay, you stay with us. And then they were like, well, we're not going to pay taxes for wars we don't support. People like Amos Alcott, Bronson, the Transcendentalist movement, people like Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson and Charles Lane, all these individuals most people have never even heard of, but they made a big difference, especially in their hometowns where they did these things. And over time, as it multiplied, people started to see, wait, something's going on here. There's tyranny. We think we're America. Like, this is the 1800s after the American Revolution. Everybody thinks, oh, well, you know, people are equal. No, you still have slavery. No, you still have problems. No, you still have tyranny. The abolitionists were like, wait, we're still enslaved, right? So I think there's this pattern of history that you're hitting on, Vinny, where people have to rise up again and again, and then soon people finally start to realize the nature of the system. But I don't think that just changing the law or changing the politician is going to change the circumstance. And I think maybe you know this too, interviewing many different individuals. It's the system itself. Would you agree with that?
Well, precisely. However, the system is an abstraction. You can't touch a forest, but you can touch a tree. So that means that the system is predicated on the backs of significant portions of individuals, possibly about 20 million worldwide individuals that would be directly involved in this system and supportive of it and know, or at least partly know, what its aims are. And if you could remove those 20 million people, like, just as a thought process. I've been talking to military people and assassins and all sorts of people on the show, And they've all said that basically what's happening here is that you've got very, very hard targets, okay? People who are difficult to launch any kind of significant operation on, even for a CIA assassin to take out, so for example, a president or a head of state or a head of a major corporation. There's significant costs involved there. It says it costs about $250,000 per person that you want to take out. And that's specifically because you need to bribe all the authorities first to stand down for at least 12 to 18 minutes at the time of the attack, so that your infiltrated team, usually a 3 or 4 man fire team, are able to exfiltrate the zone and get out of of the roadblocks beforehand. Okay.
Gosh, are you going to go into detail with this?
Well, and so they said that there was a journalist, I believe he's living in Bali now, used to be make a lot of money after his journalism career and a number of other things, and talking to all the high people, as you do. And he said that basically it's sniper teams, you know. It was just like, these guys are there's a lot of people out there who are very, very adamant that if you want the New World Order to just stop in its tracks, there could be a deck of cards, just like Bush had with all the Iraqi officials during the Iraq War, of people that you want to be brought in or taken out. And if you had a significant list like that and you had sniper teams all around the world, you could save 7 billion people by sacrificing 20 million. All right. It's a simple numbers game. And it seems to be the most effective method. However, that is last effing resort. Before the Americans started killing redcoats, they pleaded with the king himself. They protested. They did a number of significant actions that were non-violent before they were forced. They were forced to start using defensive force against their enslavers. Okay? And so what we need to do is run through the gamut of all the things that we can possibly do of a non-violent, peaceful nature before we start resorting to the use of defensive force. Now, the reason I say defensive force is because it's not violence. If somebody hits you in the face and you knock them out, you are not being violent. They were the one being violent because they violated your space. You are using defensive force because you are using whatever force is necessary to get that person to stop being violent. Okay? Mm. That's all you want. There is a vein that runs through certain men. They don't like chaos or disorder, and they can't live with it without doing something about it. That is what is happening here in this world. There are men who want order. They want a return to it. And they see the forces of chaos amassing power and strength and influence all around them. And to a man who needs order to maintain his sanity, he cannot do anything but oppose it.
Yeah. So you have a court case coming up, and I know that, you know, I want you to share where people can learn a lot more about this whole situation. I know you've done many different interviews and stuff about this too. Now that you're able to, I mean, gosh, I'd be yelling at the rooftops and just like, if I were you, but geez, man, it's crazy. I talk to people, even in the United States, you hear crazy stories. Oh, we're supposed to be free and have freedom of speech. No, if it's written down on a piece of paper, if some order follows, says, hey, I'm going to suppress my conscience today, there goes, you know, many lives. Like you said, the number one cause of unnatural death. That should alarm so many people. So how could people learn about, like, your court case? Like, just give us a little synopsis of where you're at now, what you're trying to do, and what do you plan to do in the future?
Okay, so if you go to my website, vinnyeastwood.com, that's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news, you can see the Day Democracy Died banner. And if you click on that, you'll be able to see the 33-minute and 33-second documentary that I made about our arrest on that day. And that will basically give you a reasonably quick synopsis of what the context was, what happened on the day, and what happened immediately following that. Now, furthermore, we are going to be gathering outside the Auckland High Court for our appeal on Monday, the 31st of July at 10 a.m., and that's at Waterloo Quadrant in the central city there. And the idea here is that our appeal is a landmark case, all right? There really hasn't been anything like this happen in New Zealand before, where people have been arrested for peacefully protesting. Many people have been arrested and things of that nature, but they've never been charged, they've been released and things of that nature. So now we're talking about the direct challenging of the law and its application in New Zealand. Do we have the right to protest? Do we have the right to free speech? Do we have the right to peacefully gather? Yes or no? And if people want that answer to be yes, we need significant support in order to show that there is a thirst for freedom, that there is a desire for justice in New Zealand. And speaking of which, if you do want to, if you're not able to attend, you can go to change.org and search Billy TK or Vinnie Eastwood, and you can sign the petition, Justice for Billy TK and Vinnie Eastwood. And at the moment, we've got over 12,000 signatures, so we're just a little short jump away from getting the 15,000. We would like to people to support us there. And, of course, doing interviews like this, Corey, are probably the most important thing because we've been, I guess, shunned, largely, by the entire New Zealand Truth Movement. And that hurts. That hurts a lot. I sacrificed my 20s and most of my 30s to try and produce the truth for New Zealanders so that they could understand what's going on here and that they can feed their minds and feed their hearts with fun and laughter and information. And yeah, to be left out in the cold like this by all the people who've come in after the fact, after all that work I've done, is extremely distressing, because it means that what happens to them if they go down. I remember Counterspin Media got 14 and 28 years respectively for sharing a link to a documentary about the Christchurch mosque massacre. That's what they're facing at the moment. They had all their computer and studio equipment taken from them. They were a significant alternative media operation at the time. Not anymore, you know. This country just takes us and destroys us. Liz Gunn had her like thumb near broken off by police. She's just standing there asking questions, and then they assault her, smash her cameraman's $15,000 camera. We've got Lee Williams, who got his bank account taken off of him, and threats to cancel his residency so that he couldn't live in this country anymore. We've got Brad Flutie, who was assaulted and tased by police for not wearing a mask in a store where he already talked to the manager and they said it's okay, he doesn't have to wear one. Myself, losing 65,000 YouTube subscribers and 6,000 videos, 20,000 hours worth of interviews from the deplatforming, and now I'm lucky if I can get more than a dozen people watching live across YouTube and Twitch and Facebook combined, right? This country and all the people in it who are fighting for freedom are under massive threat, massive attack. And each and every time any of these people has been in a significant place of distress, I've been there to offer my support, to bring them on the show, to do whatever I can to help. Okay? And I would love it if that was reciprocated. But I know that everybody has their own things that they're trying to do. And I accept that because I've been doing my own thing this whole time. And I just need a lot of help right now. So if there's anybody out there in the entire international truth movement who would like to interview me, would like to give me some support, give light to the issues that are facing New Zealand, which ostensibly affect you all. Because if it's successful here, you can guarantee it's happening in your neck of the woods too. Guaranteed. Every time every American activist has told me about something that's terrible happening there, I was like, hey, that's happening in New Zealand. Every time a New Zealander says that something's terrible is happening here, that, hey, that's happening in America. This is one global system, and we are all brothers and sisters in this fight, all of us. We are one family stepping into the darkness together, and we got to hold hands if we want to hang on to each other, okay? Because we're facing probably the worst and most significant threat to human life that a big planet killer asteroid might look tame by comparison, all right? Yeah. Because as G. Edward Griffin told me, he's about the survival of the free human race. And the reason why that is because there's no point in surviving if you're not free. And many people throughout the years and throughout history have laid down on that barbed wire so that other people could walk across their back free. And now it's all of our turn.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, you know, your work is admirable. Like I said, you have fun in the process. And I think people can have fun in the process. Even if there's tyranny, the more we stick together, and it's going to become easier as time moves on if we all stick together on this and continue moving on with what we know to be right. And we're unfearful because we know fear is the enemy. Fear is what causes this whole system. Fear is what this system relies on. So if people are fearful of acting, of just speaking up, of getting started, I mean, I encourage they get started. There's always a way to get started. This is why I created the Liberator 2. And, you know, the motto is our country is the world. Our countrymen are all mankind. So, Vinny, I welcome you anytime you ever have a message to share with the world or any of your audience. They ever want to write an article, turn to a video for them. They can network on the website. They can share their activism, their events, photos, music. I know you shared with me some of your music. It's great. We're passionate people. We care about our world. And we're looking for other people who do the same. And so if you are out there, I just want to say, you know, you're welcome here with this global, worldwide community here of people who just care for humanity. That's it. Is that a hard thing to ask for, Vinny? I mean, come on. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody out there eats carbohydrates, drinks, smokes, eats sugar, or is under stress, then you probably have a liver condition. Okay? And the first thing you know when you've got a liver condition is that you'll become apathetic. Now, when I listed all those things, they strike you as the list of things that everybody does all day long, everywhere, doesn't it? Yeah. My theory, this is my conspiracy theory, I'd like to claim ownership of it, is that the people who have created our culture have specifically ensured that these elements of the diet and imbibing are so ubiquitous that almost everybody will do them all the time, specifically because the liver shuts down and produces apathy if those things are affecting you, because it's unable to cleanse. That's what you call toxic people, all right? Now, why would they do this? Let me ask you something. Let's say you've got an apathetic population, a population that literally is physically incapable of caring about anything. What can you do to them?
Yeah, anything. It opens the door, at least, and then it makes, if one is permissible, then the other ones become more permissible, and then it aggregates. As one evil is permitted and people say, oh, well, this evil, this violence is allowed here, it's allowed here, it's allowed there. Well, now violence is going to grow. This is why limited government and smaller forms of government, as the test of time and America has shown itself, do not work. And people have to reevaluate their politics, their way of thinking, their morality. Why people like Mark Passio or Larkin Rose or yourself are really challenging the heart to this matter, which is our minds. And like you said, the millions of people, the everyday person. Mm. So Vinny, thank you. I appreciate the health tips. I appreciate you sharing all this information. I encourage people to look into your work. I wanted to just keep this pretty short, sweet, to the point, as I mentioned to you, because this is part of the project. I want everybody to get involved. I create new projects for people to get involved where you only have to send in a one-minute clip. So please do get started. Even if you're like, oh, I'm new to content creation, even if somebody wants to help share and get the world to be a healthier place, like you mentioned, that can help people's minds. I mean, it definitely helped in my mindset. I'm able to think more clearly, more rationally, and just more on top of things, have more energy for life. And that's a beautiful thing. You feel better. And once you free yourself and you open your mind, like Frederick Douglass, a former slave in the 1800s, I mean, once he freed his mind with knowledge, he couldn't get it out of his mind. You know, he had to be free. He had to share it with others. It was an obligation. It was a burden at times, but that burden was like a moral responsibility toward the truth, truth being our authority. And that was a higher authority over all men. That it's like, I have a connection to, I know my purpose in life. And that's something that can help so many people in a world where, you know, we're consuming, we don't maybe have purpose, we're trying to find our lives. We can help others, and it can definitely help us in the long run. So, Vinny, I want to thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to say, your website, for where people can find you again?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing, hope is a very important thing. I was talking to Dr. Leonard Caldwell, who claims to have cured up to 30,000 people of cancer. And he was talking to a doctor one time, and the doctor said to this patient, "Oh, I think it's terminal. You probably got about 6 months to live." And he asked him, "Why did you tell him that?" And he goes, "Well, I don't want to give them false hope." And Leonard said, "That is the stupidest thing I have ever heard in my life. Every hope is good. Even false hope." Okay? So if you have some kind of belief, if you've got some kind of devotion, if you've got some kind of passion, and you have any speck of hope in the desert of desolation that is out there, cling to it. Okay? Cling desperately if you have to. Dig your fingers into that hope and don't let it go. There's a reason why. It's because you will survive far more likely than those people who don't have any. The POW camps in Vietnam with American servicemen, basically no hope of rescue. You know, the ones who overwhelmingly survived were the ones who had a very strong faith. Mm. Because when they were alone with no hope of rescue, they weren't alone. And they weren't without hope. That's what starts in the mind. That's what stays in the heart. And that's what your gut tells you when things are going wrong. You have neurons in each of those parts of your body. And if you want to know what the point is, if right now you're feeling faithless or you're losing hope or something of that nature, just understand the fabric of reality and how it's laid out. Okay? The world is a holographic fractal projection of collective consciousness experiencing itself subjectively. All right? What does that mean? It means the nature of reality is holographic. So if you take a picture of you and you put it in a hologram instead of a hard drive and try to delete it, that whole picture of you is still there. It's just half the resolution. If you try to delete it again, the whole picture of you is still there. Just half the resolution. This is the fabric of reality. So that means every thought that you have, every action you take, everything that you build can never really truly be forgotten or destroyed. It still exists in some form, somewhere, some way. And it is built upon the back of a fractal. If you look inside your finger, you'll find it's got a cell in there. If they look inside that cell, it's made up of all these other ones. If you look inside those, it's made up of all these other ones. Guy had a granite crystal microscope, got 60,000 times magnification. all life is life that is infinitely built upon all life that is infinitely built upon all life, infinitely down and infinitely up. I'm a cell on this planet. The planet's a cell in the galaxy. The galaxy a cell in the universe. The universe a cell in a much larger organism we don't even have a concept for yet. So not only can nothing you do ever be forgotten or destroyed, it's just a smaller or larger version of something else. Okay? You are part of it. And everything that you do affects all the infinite civilizations in your body and all the infinite civilizations that you're a part of. Everything that you do, everything that you think. Okay? Because you have consciousness. Matter has consciousness. These guys did a thing called the double slit experiment where they had a sheet of aluminium foil behind these two metal slots and they had a proton gun to just fire protons through those slots and see what would happen. What they figured would happen was it would go bang, bang, and then they'd find out how the particle exploded. But it didn't. It went bang, and turned into a waveform. And they're like, whoa, that's interesting. Let's put a camera right there, and let's see how that happens. Bang, bang! The particle reacted differently, because it knew it was being observed. It got stage fright. And that means if a photon can think and has consciousness, that means everything does. Electrons, protons, neurons, morons, all of them. And you are experiencing this subjectively, okay? You're from the inside looking out at all the things of your scale on the fractal, of all the things that you could possibly remember and forget in the hologram. Who are you? You're a fifth-dimensional consciousness being, okay? What does that mean? It means the first dimension is a dot. It's the simplest. The second is a line. The third is a box. The fourth is that box moving through time. And the fifth dimension is the box, but it's beyond time and it's beyond space. This is where all your thoughts come from. They come out of absolutely nowhere. They come from the past. They come from the future. They come from right now. And they are not yet manifest. If you have a tune, if you're a musician, if you have an idea for a photo, if you're a photographer, if you have the idea for a new engine, if you're an engineer, all of those things first exist in the mind. And as a fifth-dimensional consciousness being, that inspiration, if you don't act upon it, will just go psss and fade into nothing. But if you spend your fourth-dimensional time willing that idea into the three-dimensional reality, it can then be seen, observed, tasted, or touched by other people that share this reality with you. And each and every one of their experiences from these wonderful things that you create affect them, all the infinite civilizations within them, and all the infinite scales of civilizations and thoughts that have ever existed. Okay? This is why your thoughts are important. This is why you are important. This is why making things that don't yet exist is your purpose for living. Because if you don't create the things that you see and think in your head that make the world a better place, you will become bitter and resentful, mostly of the people who do that which you do not do. Okay? The obligation and the task is upon you, and it won't be easy. Just know that everything you do affects everything else, and you may never see the benefit of it. You might not see the significance of it. Maybe in a couple of hundred years, somebody will listen to this and be awakened and make themselves or their life better. Doesn't matter. Do what you do because it is the right thing to do. For it needs no further justification.
Beautiful. Yes, I think this is part of the reason why I took on the abolitionist. I mean, they inspired me, but they actually created change. And we can absolutely do the same thing. It wasn't so long ago, and history keeps repeating itself. We definitely have the potential after thousands of years, ending a practice like slavery, oh, it's natural to exist. No, we can end another practice for another thousands of years if humanity decides, like you said, use their mind, their will, to ultimately manifest this. So, beautiful, Vinny. Thank you very much. I want everybody to check out Vinny Eastwood. Vinny Eastwood, that's his name and his show, everything he's got going on. And be sure to check out everything he talked about while his court case. And you've got songs, you've got everything, man. You got documentaries, you've interviewed everybody that I know. So be sure to check it out. We've also done an interview before. I'll link it in the description below. Get involved with the Liberator 2, Liberator 2 News. That's what I'm reporting here for. And peace out, everybody. Take care.